Happy Friday. Welcome to August. Drive Time with DeRusha. We've got one more half hour left before we get to Twins pregame. And what an eventful night at the ballpark. It's going to be in Cleveland as the Minnesota Twins with 10 players shipped off during trades. Gone. So the pregame right here on CCO. I'll be interested to hear what Rocco has to say in the pregame conversation. Yeah, very interesting stuff. That'll be coming your way in 20 minutes. But in the meantime, so much going on around here. Let's get you up to date with the D-Rush Hour news headline.
The headlines you might have missed. Without missing a beat, this is your fast pass through the biggest and most impactful stories of the day. Welcome to the D-Rush Hour headlines, starting with The Lead.
And a story that surprised me today, a group of Minneapolis indigenous groups are basically putting out a call, according to the Minnesota Star Tribune, a call for help. Homeless camps, drug traffickers, and many American Indian leaders on the south side of Minneapolis are saying, we got to get some help. To find out more, we bring in Dr. Joe Hobot, the president and CEO of the American Indian Opportunity Industrialization Center, who's with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Joe, thanks for being here. What is the situation that you guys, how bad is it that you're really putting out this alert for help?
Thank you for having me. So the situation is incredibly bad. I think that what we have seen in a developing in recent years is a steady increase of unsheltered relatives that are lacking in adequate shelter and are in the depths of very serious addictions to fentanyl and heroin. And as they are struggling to maintain their life, to stay alive, we see these encampments crop up throughout the city. We have many organizations that do incredible work to provide life-saving harm reduction services to these encampments. However, what we've seen in more recent years is that as those folks that have seized the help that was offered, they've oftentimes got up and out of these encampments. The residual effects behind are a lot of drug dealing, prostitution, gang violence, and it's really been incredibly disruptive to our communities and unsafe. And so as organizations, we're looking at not only how do we maintain these critical outreach efforts to help those in need that are unsheltered or in the throes of addiction, but restore a balance to make sure that the organizations that are providing services to community members like the American Indian OIC that provides education and workforce development and job training, that we retain safe and secure campuses for those community members that come and go through our front doors.
So give a sense there, Joe, because students and staff members who are coming to the OIC, coming to the school that you run, have to go through, really, it's a scenario that I think no suburb would tolerate. Many neighborhoods in Minneapolis, it just wouldn't be allowed to happen. But for some reason, We've led with compassion and treatment, I think, and outreach. And I guess what I'm asking is, are we at a point where it's like that isn't going to get it done at this point of the game?
I think we've, in our community, we've always understood that that is not going to get it done, that it's going to be a all-hands-on-deck type of approach where we need to have consistent and persistent resourcing to those organizations that are providing these outreach efforts for our unsheltered, as well as providing ongoing round-the-clock community safety applications, whether it's policing as well as public safety prior to arrest, public safety in terms of making sure that we have adequate after-school programming and we have adequate ways to reach our community members before they fall into the traps of addiction. The chickens are just coming home to roost now, and it's getting to a crisis proportion where we have to really think about keeping our campuses safe.
Right. So what do we do? Do you want more arrests? You want these to be cleared out? What are you asking for?
I think at this point, with this resolution that the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors Group has passed, 21 organizations have voted yes for this. Is that we want to make sure that we can maintain the safety and security, the integrity of the campuses of those organizations, and yeah. So we created exclusionary zones around our properties that if we see anything looking like the beginnings of these encampments, to have them disassembled and removed immediately with immediate assistance from city, county, and state authorities who are involved in this work. We then would like to have those organizations that do provide outreach services, harm reduction, handing out Narcan or toiletry items or what have you, to avoid these exclusionary zones. Oftentimes we've seen random citizens, you know, showing up with a car full of food and handing them out to folks. And as they empty their provisions and leave, behind them, the formation of a new encampment begins. And for many of our organizations, we're left to contend with these large groups of people and all of the activities that come around it on our properties. You have to clean them out and sweep them away to make sure our students can come and go without being harassed by drug dealers or johns or pimps or what have you. And so, you know, as long as the outreach efforts can go to neutral sites or in other areas, the encampments, they just cannot be near our properties. We owe that to our citizens that are trying to do right. I know the American Indian NYC, we provide a really robust services for folks that are in reentry. These are folks that had been incarcerated, that maybe possibly had been in addiction, that are in recovery now. We have a debt of responsibility to them to provide them a safe and secure campus as they try to do right by their families and by the community to stay on the right track, to get a job, to complete their educations, and to provide for their families. And they deserve to be able to do this without being harassed or having to witness all the criminal activities that seem to immediately emerge around these encampments.
It's hard, man, right? It's such a tough situation. But at a certain point, the rights of unhoused people, of addicted people, to do their thing, in my view, shouldn't outweigh your rights and the students and the native community that's trying to live their life in a law-abiding way and make a better life for themselves. This is, to a certain degree, a zero-sum game, and it's out of whack.
Well, I feel it's out of balance. I think that we have real issues with the addiction. Still are human beings, and they are our relatives that are in the streets. Yeah. They deserve compassion. They deserve all the help that we have a responsibility to provide, but we need to remain in balance to provide the services for those in our community members that are not in such dire straits.
I think that's a good way to restore
that balance is where we're at now.
Joe Hobart, really appreciate it. We're thinking of you guys, and we got to do better by our neighbors and our native community. Appreciate it. Thanks, Joe.
Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Next up on the lead is the Minnesota Twins fire sale. There is no question that Twins Nation is mad, angry, disappointed, let down. The question of why, because we've never seen this kind of a move before, comes up, and it is something the president of business operations and the president of baseball operations, Derek Falvey, talked about.
He met the media last night and talked about a lot of different things. And so we have some of those clips we want to play back for folks. And first of all, he addressed the question, did he know going into the trade deadline that he was going to be making this many moves?
I think we came into this deadline knowing there would be some guys, certainly on the rental front, right, that we would be talking about given where we were in the standing. So that was focus one. I think the secondary focus here was, if we could find ways with where our roster was, with us not performing at the level that we wanted to be at, if we could find ways to get deals that we felt brought real significant talent back into the organization with guys who might have a couple years of control, admittedly, on the roster, that we could reset and retool a little bit of the roster, we wanted to be open-minded to it.
Reset and retool, obviously the key words there. Derek Falvey also talked about the fact that he had a conversation with Byron Buxton. We mentioned that earlier in the interview with Dan Hayes. What must Buck be thinking? Well, he was at least clued in that this was going to be happening. And here's what Derek had to say about that conversation.
Byron's a pro all the way through. And, you know, that's a obviously private conversation I won't get into in depth. But I felt I owed him a conversation about this because that's who, you know, who he is. And he's the core and heartbeat of this team. I mean, we got a lot of good leaders. We got a lot of good people in that clubhouse. But I think we all know, to some degree, we go as Byron goes, right? Yeah. And his energy and his smile and his spirit are critical. And there's going to be a lot of young players that are going to be looking to him for leadership and support. But I saw his comments in Atlanta. We all did, you know, about what it meant. And, you know, candidly, I didn't talk to him about a trade. I hadn't talked to him about before a trade. I've never talked to him about a trade. You know, and I knew that's how he felt because he wanted to be a Twin, and he's part of this, and he's part of our fabric. He wants to make us better. So he knows that there's some, you know, good young talent on its way. It's hard for him, right? It's teammates, it's brothers, it's people that are in that clubhouse. But I felt I owed him that conversation, and that my door is always open and my phone's always ready to talk to him about it. And he was Byron, you know, a pro's pro. It's just who he is.
Obviously, that conversation important. Also enormously important is having a conversation with fans who are understandably upset that the team was stripped apart as it was yesterday. Here's what Derek Falvey had to say in terms of what he wants to say to fans.
Part of a small to mid-market baseball team, that's just the realities of, you know, the way this works. There are trades that happen. That happens across baseball. I'm not saying that's unique to Minnesota and it's hard, but it's about making sure that you're constantly trying to find a way to not just sit on your heels, hope that it all goes better, and keep your fingers crossed. It's a way to actually kind of go invest in the future of the team, hopefully the short term and the long term. And I think our fans are going to love these guys when they get up here because they all bring – they're all high-character guys. They're all guys with tremendous talent and impact. And, yeah, there's a lot of talent still left in that clubhouse. I mean, I look at that roster. I called Byron Buxton earlier today, and we haven't talked about him at all, and just made sure he knew, you know, where we felt about this team. But when you roll Byron Buxton and Royce Lewis out and you can lead staffs with Pablo Lopez and Joe Ryan, I think you're going to be in a pretty good place. You're going to play some fun baseball games. There's a lot of talent that's about to join them over the next few years.
We hope, we hope, we hope. Good stuff. Thank you for that, Dan, and thank you for gathering those sound clips from Derek Falvey. Twins baseball will be on the air. First pitch at 6:10 tonight in Cleveland. Pregame starts in 10 minutes. So keep it right here on CCO. Let's break. In just a minute, we'll get you up to date on page 2. D-Rush Hour news headlines. We do this every day at 5 o'clock. In just a minute, we are going to talk about a move that Minnesota made to protect elected officials. Def Leppard with a new album and the search for the perfect peanut when we come back. D Rush Hour news headlines. Page 2 begins with news of the EPA weakening rules on forever chemicals. Again, the Environmental Protection Agency saying maybe those chemicals that are around forever aren't quite so bad.
We did invent the Muppet Labs Party Disperser Pill.
Party Disperser Pill? What does it do?
Well, when you want your guests to go home, just drop it into a punch bowl and poof, the party's over. Everybody back up.
Why?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, the state here in Minnesota is already, we have our own law about PFAS, those forever chemicals. At least 250 bills have been introduced in 36 states this year to address PFAS by banning a chemical in products, which has largely happened here in Minnesota. Next July will be the first state to have a widespread PFAS reporting requirement in effect, according to the Star Tribune. But the Washington Post reporting on how the EPA is talking about rescinding and then reconsidering that drinking water standard on those PFAS. Very confusing for states that are required to enforce the federal standard when the federal standard is in flux. Minnesota has taken a move to protect elected officials. KSTP reporting that the Secretary of State is no longer displaying addresses in the online version of the Minnesota Blue Book. So this, of course, after the murder of House Speaker Emerita Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark, the shootings of Senator John Hoffman and his wife. The Blue Book, as published, still will have home addresses. There wasn't enough time to get that out. But the home addresses will not be on the website version. Now, it is a Minnesota law, it is public record, that if you file for office, you have to share your home address because, I don't know, we want to make sure you actually live in the district. So it is a little difficult to protect the security need and also the need for public information. So basically, Secretary of State saying if someone requests it, they will hand it over. That is the law. But the law doesn't say you have to display it and have it on a website, so they'll make it a little more difficult. Fascinating story about the search for a perfect peanut for peanut M&M.
Crispy M&Ms are back.
What are you doing?
You said to tell our fans crispy M&Ms are back.
So the peanut M&M was in trouble. New York Times with this really interesting story. If you get some time over the weekend, you should read it. At the headquarters of Mars, the candy company, they were getting complaints in the early 2000s about rancid nuts. So they started solving the problem. They discovered a genetic mutation that made the nuts a little healthier, had more monounsaturated fat, like olive oil, so it was less likely to turn rancid. But now they wanted a perfectly symmetrical peanut. And so researchers at the University of Georgia got to work, created this peanut. And now, right now, they're trying to race against the changing climate and find a new peanut. Def Leppard released a new album. Dan, a new Def Leppard album. Are you ready? I don't know. Do we need this? Do we need a new album from Def Leppard? No. They use laptops. And so it'll be their first new album since 2022. Hey, the Minneapolis Club. I was there this week for a patio party. You can go hang out and watch the Twins game over at the Minneapolis Club. They have a restaurant called Charlie's. So make a reservation, pop in, say hi to me at the bar. Enjoy the whoever's on the Twins.